Chapter 22. Brevet Captain Ilyith arrived at the meeting site only slightly ahead of time to avoid having to stand around making small talk with senior officers she disliked, and to avoid any possibility of her being seen anywhere near Admiral Urquhart so his disgrace did not stain her own reputation. The two of them had spoken several times earlier, beginning with when she returned from the astonishing mission to the planet humans called Earth. Their most recent conversation was shortly before she was transferred from his command to be reassigned to the Fleet General Staff in the planning office. Urquhart had warned her that while she was being promoted to captain for her diligent efforts that exposed the human conspiracy, Urquhart himself was in danger of being relieved of command. He was given credit for allowing Ilyith to investigate her suspicions that the ghost ship was not controlled by a rogue group of Bos Varak, and later to pursue inquiries into the odd behavior of wormholes. Those initiatives, which were considered a waste of time by Urquhart's peers, had ultimately been successful in uncovering the horrifying truth. However, there was no arguing with the truth that humans now possessed elder weapons, altering the delicate balance of power in the galaxy. Someone had to pay the price for that humiliating defeat, and Urquhart was the obvious candidate for punishment. With Urquhart's impending removal from power, the Maxulk's hegemony's 14th fleet had been sidelined for what fleet headquarters termed extensive retraining required due to repeated failures to adhere to fleet standards of performance. Everyone knew that was a lie, but it was a particularly convenient lie, for half of the battle groups of the 14th Fleet would be transferred to other units, increasing the power of those senior admirals. With Urquhart having fallen in disgrace, the star of another senior admiral was ascending. Admiral Reichard had advocated for taking a hard line against the ghost ship, throwing all of the hegemony's resources into an all-out effort to blockade wormholes around the most recent known location of the mysterious enemy. Reichert's plan was to limit the area in which the ghost ship Scourge could operate, then slowly squeeze the net closed, trapping the enemy ship. His fellow senior officers knew such a plan was unlikely to succeed, so they had instead approved Urquhart's plan to lure the ghost ship into a trap. The plan had nearly been a success, except the ghost ship arrived before the ambush force was ready. Somehow, though caught in multiple overlapping damping fields, the ghost ship had escaped. Not only escaped, it had later attacked one of the ships left behind to investigate how the ghost ship had gotten away from a powerful force. Nearly a success was not good enough. The ghost ship had escaped and later somehow acquired elder weapons. Reichard argued that if Urquhart's plan had not been a humiliating failure, the humans would not have elder weapons. The situation was all Urquhart's fault, and by extension, the fault of those who supported Urquhart over Reichard. That, too, was a lie, but it was another convenient lie. The truth was, the senior leadership of the hegemony was frightened by the thought of primitive aliens having doomsday weapons and needed someone to blame. The meeting at first was a typical inquiry, nothing that Ilyith had not endured before. She had already testified dozens of times since returning from Earth. The questions were a mere formality. She would actually have been a bit bored by the proceedings, except she was curious to know why she was there. The questions had all been asked before, in some cases word-for-word repetitions of previous inquiries. The meeting was taking up the valuable time of senior officers who should have better things to do. All she could imagine was that there had been a new development, something she did not yet know about. That was not unusual. Even as a provisionally promoted fleet captain, her access to sensitive information was restricted. However, since Urquhart was technically still in command of what remained of the 14th Fleet, he had the highest level clearance. If something there had been an important development that might affect her, she felt certain Urquhart would have found a way to let her know, which meant even a senior admiral was unaware of why Reichard had really called for the meeting. That was interesting. When the questions for Ilyith were finished, with nothing new having been said, she was dismissed, along with all but the most senior staff. Senior Admiral Reichard of the 8th Fleet requested to address the assembled officers on a matter of great urgency, and he was granted permission to speak. A veteran of more political battles than military conflicts, Reichard took control of the main projector. The device showed images in the hologram that dominated one end of the room, but also sent visual and auditory data directly to the cranial implants of everyone within the room's security field. Out of tradition and politeness, Iliath looked between the holographic display and Reichert, though her focus was on the images playing in her head.
"First," Reichert began, "I wish to remind my esteemed colleagues," he looked directly at Senior Admiral Zeverant, commander of the Third Fleet, "that since the truly astonishing discovery that humans control the ghost ship and have acquired elder weapons, our mighty fleet has done nothing. We have taken no action other than a limited and perhaps overly cautious watch on Earth. Senior Admiral Zeverant, as you were one of the authors of this passive policy, could you comment on why our fleet has been ordered to take no action against the humans?"
Zeverant knew the question was a trap, though without knowing what point Reichert was trying to make, she could only repeat the hegemony's stated policy.
"Certainly, my esteemed colleague."
She did not bother to mask the hateful look she shot at the commander of the Eighth Fleet.
"We need to gather information. Clearly, our previous assessment of humans was flawed. It would be dangerously irresponsible to provoke the humans without an understanding of their full capabilities. Also, there is no need to rush into action. The humans possess elder weapons, that is true, but they can't use them without condemning themselves to extinction."
Reichert nodded slowly, frowning for effect.
"It is your expert opinion, then, that humans pose no threat to us if we do not provoke them?"
Zeverant allowed the ghost of a smile to crease her lips. She was not falling into whatever trap the other fleet commander had planned.
"It is not my expert opinion, esteemed colleague, for it has become painfully obvious that none of us are an expert on human behavior. It is a cautious approach to an unprecedented threat."
Reichert looked down, as if considering the wisdom of Zeverin's words.
"The basis of this policy, then, is the belief that humans do not have any plan to employ their doomsday weapons against us?"
"Unless you have somehow received information that humans are suicidal, yes," Zeverant agreed. "After the first time the treacherous Rindaloo used elder weapons against us, they have held their arsenal in reserve, as we have with our own cache of strategic weapons. There is no reason to think the humans, or any rational intelligent beings, would choose to kill themselves."
"Ah," Reichert pursed his lips. "What if I told you the humans are planning to use their weapons, have in fact already put such a plan into action?"
Zeverant's eyes darted to Iliath before she caught herself.
"Admiral Reichert, if you have information this group needs to know, then you must—"
"The information only recently was received and was confirmed only shortly before this meeting. Supporting data is being transmitted now."
He waited a moment for the faces of the audience to go blank as they received and began examining the files. Before the group could read through the material and draw their own conclusions, he continued.
"The humans have an ability to connect wormholes outside the galaxy, to regions beyond our reach. They have begun to set up a colony in a satellite galaxy that is called Sculptor by humans. These facts cannot be doubted. A task force of ships just returned from the satellite galaxy after bringing several thousand humans there to colonize a planet. Humans plan a series of future missions to transfer a significant portion of their population from Earth to this secure site. My esteemed colleagues, I am sure you can see the purpose of establishing a colony at a secure site where we cannot touch them. For humans, with their limited resources, setting up a colony outside the galaxy is a major effort. It is clear what they intend. Once the colony becomes visible without external support, they will trigger their weapons here and end the threat to their existence."
Zeverant waited for the room to quiet down after Reichert's outburst.
"Admiral Reichert, you are suggesting the humans would sacrifice the majority of their population?"
"Yes."
"Your opinion is based on your deep understanding of human psychology?"
"It is based on logic,"
Reichard glared, his anger evident from his facial expression and the pheromones released by his scent glands.
If faced with extinction, we would do the same. In war, hard choices must be made.
Zeverant knew he was right. From time to time, ambitious young officers in the fleet's war plans division proposed a bunker strategy to end the endless war. Set up a secure population of their people in a hidden facility, then launch an all-out surprise attack on the Rindaloo. The spiders, caught unawares, would be utterly wiped out by sentinels. So would the unprotected population of Maxulks on every one of their worlds and every other intelligent species in the galaxy. It would be the worst disaster imaginable, leaving every habitable world devastated. But after waiting in hibernation for hundreds, even thousands of years if necessary, the small group of Maxulks would awaken to forever dominate a galaxy that would belong only to them. The select few, chosen to preserve the culture of their people, would ensure for the Maxulks their rightful place as lords of the galaxy, unchallenged by lesser beings. Each time the bunker strategy was proposed, the plans were rejected for the same reason all the previous plans had been rejected. It was impossible to be certain the Rindaloo did not know about preparations to construct a bunker, whether deep inside a nameless moon or as a stealth platform in the trackless wastes of interstellar space. Even beginning preparations for a bunker strategy would be seen as a serious threat by the Rindaloo, and the spiders possessed overwhelming combat power even without their elder arsenal. Taking a course of action that would result in the deaths of all but a handful of their own people was not an easy decision even by the stoic leadership of the hegemony. With the balance of power between the two apex species stable, the Maxulks were content to force their clients to fight an endless proxy war. Then, humans acquired elder weapons.
Reichard, Zeverant said evenly, careful to keep any note of pleading from her voice. Do not presume that humans think the way we do. Is there proof that humans intend to trigger their weapons?
As I said, there is simple logic,
Reichard scoffed openly.
Since you require more, we have intercepted messages between human leaders which state the purpose of setting up a secure colony is to make their elder weapons a credible threat. If an outside power were to seriously threaten Earth, the humans could trigger their weapons. I do not have to tell my esteemed colleagues that it is a small step to go from contingency to a plan. Once humans are satisfied their colony is viable on its own, then our survival will depend on an unstable, unpredictable, primitive species. I propose we move from a policy of neglect,
his eyes lingered on Zeverant,
to one of containment. We prevent the humans from growing their colony outside the galaxy to reduce the temptation to use their elder weapons. We confine them to their resource-poor, primitive star system. We make sure they can never threaten us again, and we engage the Rindaloo to join us to counter this new threat. Consider that, please. Now, before I detail my plans, everyone except senior staff will leave the chamber,
he announced with a glance directly at Iliath. After the meeting, Zeverant pinged Iliath to speak with her. Even in an office that was supposed to be secure, the Admiral was careful what she said. Only aboard one of her Third Fleet ships could she truly feel free to talk, and then only after taking extensive precautions.
My esteemed colleague Admiral Reichard has proposed a campaign of slowly escalating diplomatic pressure to isolate Earth and prevent humans from gaining allies. If that is successful, we will proceed with an escalating series of small-scale attacks to demonstrate to the galaxy that humans are not invincible. The War Plans Directorate has already approved his plans. I fear that what Reichard views as a minor attack, the humans would see as a dire threat to their existence. Tell me your thoughts,
the Admiral ordered the captain.
I do not know how much I can tell. You know the humans better than I do, certainly better than Reichard does. He actively avoids knowing anything that might contradict what he has already decided. Talk to me.
Iliath took a deep breath, though her internal monitors indicated that her blood oxygen saturation was near 100%.
Some instincts were difficult to overcome.
Admiral, I have extensively studied human history since we discovered the threat. Much of the data we have acquired is of questionable accuracy. For example, the person designated as Colonel Joe Bishop cannot possibly be as the records describe. Most likely, his accomplishments are greatly exaggerated, or he is a composite of several human commanders. I suspect the truth is a combination of the two.
How is that relevant? Bishop is not the issue.
No, he is not. I mentioned him to demonstrate that our knowledge of humans, and therefore our understanding of their culture and psychology, is almost certain to be deficient.
Understood. Proceed.
Another breath, this one for effect.
Shortly after humans developed fission, then fusion weapons, there were two superpowers on Earth. They were military alliances of nations with opposing economic philosophies, which, excuse me, Zevran shook her head. Their disputes were based on
economics?
Yes.
Humans fought a war because of this?
Yes, several wars.
Astonishing.
Perhaps we can never understand such primitive creatures. Please continue. One alliance was led by a nation called America, which incidentally is the home of Joe Bishop, if he actually exists. The competing communist bloc was led by a nation called Russia. Both leading nations possessed strategic weapons with the ability to destroy each other, so they did not fight directly. Instead, they engaged in a cold war, which involved provocations and saber-rattling, but no direct conflict. The actual fighting was between surrogates in a series of what were referred to as brushfire wars.
Much as our clients fight clients of the Rindaloo, Zevran observed.
Yes, although curiously, forces of the Americans fought directly in places called Korea and Vietnam. Russia fought directly in a place they call Afghanistan.
Zevran cocked her head.
Why would coalition leaders engage directly in fighting? That is the whole point of having clients.
I do not understand the reasoning. Perhaps the thought processes of humans require further study.
My point, Admiral, is that Reichert's plan resembles a brushfire war, punishing the enemy and tying up their resources, but not threatening them to the point when humans would trigger their strategic weapons. Ultimately, the humans will have to decide whether fighting a brushfire war against us is worth the cost.
That is a terrible gamble. We have no idea where humans will draw the line, beyond which they will take drastic action. If the human leaders are religious fanatics, Reichert's strategy could lead to ultimate disaster. While religion might motivate many human actions, they do not appear to be fanatics like the Torgala. However, I agree that a miscalculation by either side could spiral out of control. During the Cold War on Earth, the two leading powers nearly fought a nuclear engagement over a small island.
Zevran shuddered.
I fear we are entering the unknown. Iliath, I want you to create a predictive model that we can use to wargame potential actions to understand how the humans are likely to respond.
Iliath cast her eyes down to avoid the Admiral's gaze.
That will be extremely difficult given our limited experience with those creatures.
You shall have whatever resources are needed. Many of my peers fear that Reichert is reckless. We can contain the humans without taking provocative actions, but Reichert seeks glory.
He does not want mere containment. He wants to achieve victory over the humans.
Yes, Admiral.
Iliath could foresee little time for sleep and much frustration in her future.
Will that be all?
One more thing, Captain.
Do you believe the humans have an Elder AI actively helping them?
All the data we have acquired indicate that is true. However, it is very difficult to believe.
Other species believed the Maxalts possessed an elder AI, perhaps more than one AI. That was a lie, a rumor encouraged by the Maxalts themselves to increase their perceived power. They had devices that might have been part of an Elder ship's AI, though only fragments of the distributed system. Those fragments were entirely non-functional. Exhaustive study had provided not a single clue as to how the device worked or whether it even was part of an AI. To make matters worse, the Maxalks knew their rivals, the Rindaloo, almost certainly did have a functional Elder AI, and over the millennia, the Spiders had only hinted at how their captive AI was assisting them. Many of her people believed that AI was the reason why the Spiders maintained a technological edge over the Maxalks. If the humans truly did have such a capability, then provoking them could be extremely dangerous. Iliath knew the Admiral was waiting for an answer.
Ma'am, as difficult as it may be to believe the humans are being helped by an Elder AI, it is impossible to understand how they could have accomplished so much without assistance from an advanced entity. Reichert is basing his plan on the assumption there is no Elder AI, that it is a deception by the humans.
Iliath was astonished.
Can he explain how the humans captured several of our capital ships and moved a wormhole without assistance from an Elder AI?
Zevran's lips curled in a smile that contained no amusement.
My esteemed colleague finds it convenient to ignore any facts that contradict what he wishes to believe. That is dangerous,
Iliath noted with a shiver of fear.
Yes. And that is why we must have an accurate predictive model to understand the likely effects of Reichert's proposed actions. We can stop him only by showing how he will lead us to disaster. Surely the Intelligence Directorate has constructed their own model. Yes, and that model will produce any other result Reichert wants.
While the Intel people did not work for Reichert, the Senior Admiral came from that community and still retained close ties to many among the Directorate's leadership. More importantly, the Intel people were deeply humiliated by their failure to detect that the ghost ship was not controlled by a rogue faction of Bos Farrakh and by totally missing any clues that humans were conducting clandestine missions throughout the galaxy. Reichert offered the possibility to take action against the humans, to get revenge and restore the credibility of the Directorate.
We need an independent analysis to determine how far the humans can be pushed before they decide that they have no choice but to commit suicide and take us with them.
Iliath worked tirelessly to create a model that predicted human responses with a reasonable degree of accuracy. It helped that the Intelligence Directorate made their own model available for study. The Intel people were wary of being blamed if Reichert's plans backfired.
You have completed your model?
Senior Admiral Zevarant asked when Iliath's hologram appeared in the office of the Third Fleet's flagship.
Yes, Admiral. I'm afraid it is not good news. My analysis found no major flaw with the model used by the Intelligence Directorate. There is more than a 98% probability that humans will not trigger their Elder weapons until their people on Earth face extinction. The only major variable between the models is the portion of human population that is transferred to a safe refuge outside the galaxy. With their current transport capabilities, an operation to evacuate Earth is not possible. Ma'am, I am sorry. My model strengthens Reichert's argument that we can and should take direct action. I will continue to refine the model as we acquire new data, and very well, Captain. We will all see how accurate the models are as we escalate a campaign against Earth. I hope, she sighed, that we do not regret taking an enormous and unnecessary risk against a primitive species we know little about.
After Iliath's holographic image disappeared, Zevarant sat quietly for a while, thinking about the uncertain but certainly troubled future of her people. For millennia, the Maxalks had known the war would drag ever on and on without conclusion, but also without actual danger to themselves or their society. Of course, there were occasional flare-ups of direct fighting with the Rindaloo, brief engagements that led to no further violence, for both sides knew the danger of a widening conflict. Now, for the first time since Sentinels rampaged across the galaxy, there was a threat that could lead not only to the hegemony falling from power, but to extinction. Because of that possibility, the War Plans Directorate had approved another top-secret initiative to run parallel with the escalating provocations planned by Reichard. No part of the galaxy was safe from Sentinels, so the Maxalts would construct a fleet of long-range ships to fly beyond the galaxy's rim to the closest dwarf galaxy. Such a journey, beginning from the last wormhole at the edge of the home galaxy, would take hundreds, perhaps over 1,000 years. Inhabitants of the ships would be in hibernation the entire time, a problem because the longest hibernation anyone had survived was less than 80 years. Nor had a starship ever been constructed that could jump continuously for such a long time, simply providing sufficient fuel was a major obstacle. What Zevran feared was not that the project to send a fleet beyond the galaxy might fail, but that it might succeed. Having a secure fallback would tempt reckless individuals like Reichert, who had long chafed at not being able to strike the Rindaloo directly. She would need to closely monitor the progress of the Haven Fleet, as it was being called. The top-secret nature of the project would make it difficult for her to get information, but there was one thing she had learned during her long military service. The more funding a project receives, the harder it is to conceal.
I should have known. Everything was going well. Great, actually. Everything was going great. I mean, really, everything was fantastic. Better than I could have hoped. That's not me being sarcastic, it's for reals.
Earth was safe under our umbrella of invincible weapons. We had a solid start on setting up a beta site, and the waiting list for people to move there as colonists was several million names long. Probably not all of them were completely serious about living in primitive conditions while working hard to develop a colony. For sure, not all of them would meet the strict requirements, which included, you know, not being an asshole. A dismaying number of people thought that setting up life on an empty planet was an opportunity to practice whatever hateful ideology they were obsessed with. It seemed like every political or religious extremist group on Earth wanted to set up a separatist homeland on Avalon. UNEF said no, very forcefully, but that did not stop the wackadoodles from making demands to politicians and on social media. Some groups had attempted to contact the Jarraptha, trying to pay for transport off Earth to any planet where they could be alone. The Jarraptha, mostly amused, passed the information to UNEF Command. Naturally, they pestered me and other prominent members of the Merry Band of Pirates, thinking we would give them tickets to Avalon, or something like that. Skippy intercepted all the emails and social media posts so we didn't have to see them. He also had bots scanning and opening our snail mail and packages.
Hey, Joe, he asked while I was getting dressed at a hotel in Alexandria, Virginia, preparing for a meeting at the Pentagon.
What's up, Skippy? Do not tell me this tie doesn't go with the shirt. It's a uniform. I can't just throw on anything.
You could if you hadn't been such a ninny and gone with my fashion choices.
There is nothing wrong with this uniform.
What do you want?
You received another death threat, Joe.
I get death threats all the time.
Yes, but this one is written in crayon and it contains surprisingly few major spelling errors.
His tone of voice made me pause.
You're taking this seriously?
Have you reported it to...
That's the problem. I don't know who handles this sort of thing.
What are you talking about?
Who made the threat?
It's a group that wants your help to get a piece of land on Avalon, or even better, a planet they can have all for their own. They tried to contact you several times by various methods, and of course you didn't reply. Actually, the last couple times I replied for you. I am sad to say you were not very polite.
Screw whoever this is. Why can't you just tell the FBI or someone?
The civil authorities don't handle this sort of thing. The threat is to summon their leader, the Dark Lord Satan, to cast you down if you don't...
Wait, I laughed. This is a bunch of devil worshippers?
They prefer to be called Satanists, apparently. Don't be so insensitive, Joe.
To hell with them. Literally. I snickered at my own joke.
Are you sure?
Yes.
This is not something I can protect you from. If they really can summon...
Skippy... Seriously, don't worry about it.
But
their Dark Lord lost a fiddle contest to a hillbilly from Georgia. Trust me, I'm not going to lose any sleep over this.
Good point. Should I ignore it, then?
Yes. As long as they are casting spells to summon a demon against me, they're too busy to bother anyone else.
Okie doke. Okey-dokey!
Devil worshippers were one of the stranger groups, but not among the most dangerous. And not all the crazies wanted tickets to Avalon. There was even one group of wacko assholes who still wanted to go off-world to fight for the damned Kristang. Their delusional conspiracy theory was that the lizards were our true, rightful allies, and the entire UNEF organization were traitors to humanity. The list of supposed traitors included the Merry Band of Pirates and me, of course. It should be noted that the Lizard Loyalist group did not contain any of the former Keepers who had come back to Earth. None of them had any love for their Kristang captors. With the help of Skippy, or his Earth-based submind, the security services of Earth's governments were keeping a close watch on extremist groups. Part of what Skippy did was check my mail. I mean, actual snail mail. What I said was true. I got a lot of death threats. He was able to block any offensive messages sent via email or social media, but intercepting harmful letters or packages was a job for a bot. What really worried me was hate directed at my family or at the Merry Band of Pirates. Damn it, after all the sacrifices they made, to have my crew fear for their lives at home because... What was I talking about? Oh yeah, about how great everything was going. Really, it was going pretty great. I suppose every species has a small portion of the population that should be loaded into a rocket and shot into the local star. So, back to the good news. Hopefully, we would soon have the beginnings of a fleet, second-hand Jirapta ships that would require heavy maintenance and upgrades at Club Skippy. That is what UNEF instructed Chotek to negotiate for. We needed as many ships as we could get. Hans had left Earth with the Jirapta ships that brought part of the X-Force back from Paradise. He reported that negotiations to establish a formal alliance between humanity and the Beatles were progressing well. So well that the Jirapta Central Wagering Office briefly halted action on speculation about the future state of relations with Earth. You know it is serious when the Beatles pause action for any reason. While Chotek was trying to nail down a deal with the Beatles, I went out on another flight aboard Valkyrie with the good old Flying Dutchman following like a puppy. That time, we went to Club Skippy to drop off supplies and a team to begin setting up a forward operating base there. By the way, while Club Skippy was a good enough name for a place we never expected to visit again, UNEF decided that world needed a name that was more appropriate for a military base. It was China's turn to name a planet, since the beta site was officially called Avalon. What the Chinese decided was to call the planet and the star system Jiayuguan. Apparently it is named after the site of a fortress at one end of the Great Wall, so it is a good name for a remote military outpost. In case you are wondering, because I sure was, it is pronounced G-I-U-Guan. Close enough. Naturally, we Americans and the Brits and the Indians and the French immediately tagged the place with the nickname Forward Operating Base Jaguar, or just FOB Jaguar. The Chinese were a bit pissed that we had to give everything a nickname, but they agreed that Jaguar is a cool name. Anyway, I call it Jiayuguan or Jaguar. The main settlement on the planet kept the name Club Skippy because at first it was just a bunch of tents, shipping containers, and mud. Sims left the ship to take charge of logistics for the American component of the force constructing the base, and she seemed happy enough, though she didn't have much time to think about whether she was happy or not. Why do I mention all this good news? Because I should have known it was too good to be true. Joe. Margaret lifted her head off my chest and looked at me. We were in a hotel room near the 29 Palms Marine Corps base where she was stationed. I should say that is where she was stationed that month. The Marines moved her around a lot. Being at 29 Stumps was not her preference, and I could understand why. The whole area was a sun-blasted desert, and there was not a whole lot to do off base. We both joked that it reminded us of Camp Alpha. Then we decided that wasn't much to laugh about. Anyway, she went off duty at 1700 and we met at the hotel, the first night I was back from FOB Jaguar. The plan for the evening was to go out somewhere for dinner, hopefully a place where neither of us would be recognized. All I cared about was being with her. Hey, I smiled at her. Your hair smells good, like pineapple or something.
That's my shampoo. Joe, we can't keep doing this.
Sure we can. I ran a hand down to the small of her back. Give me 20 minutes to recharge and I'll be ready to...
It's not that.
She propped her head up on one hand.
We need to talk.
Shit, I groaned, stiffening. And not stiffening in a good way, if you know what I mean. How come people never say we need to talk when it's a good thing?
If it's good,
she shrugged.
You don't need to talk.
When it's good is the best time to talk.
We need to talk now.
Okay, I said, wondering if we should get dressed first. Having a potentially hurtful or heartbreaking conversation was awkward when the two parties were naked. I'm listening.
We can't keep doing this.
She tapped my chest, then she reached down to squeeze my, let's say it is my friend. Not, shh, she put a finger to my lips.
Let me talk, please.
All I did was nod, so she continued.
I considered your offer.
This doesn't sound like you're going to say yes. My offer, really a suggestion, was that she and Skippy set up an arrangement like I had. The Marine Corps would detail her to service with Skippy Stan. That was my solution to allow us to be together while she remained in the Marines. My spidey sense told me she didn't like the idea as soon as I mentioned it. I was hoping she would change her mind.
I can't. I just can't. The rules are the rules. If I'm aboard Valkyrie, you're my commanding officer. Skippy's fake country doesn't change the facts. This morning I got a very polite inquiry about the nature of our relationship, as they said it.
She looked away, and I swear she was blushing. Shit. I squeezed her shoulder. You're not in trouble yet, are you? Officially? Are they proceeding with an article?
I think it was a subtle warning, she said.
I bit my lip. But you will be in trouble.
This.
She tapped my chest again.
This. Us. You and me. Like this. Isn't right. Not by the regs.
Oh, screw. Catching myself before I said screw the regulations, I closed my mouth. Have you thought about what Emily and Dave are doing?
He's a contractor, she said in a way that meant she had thought about it and did not like the idea.
Think about this. If you become a contractor, you'll never have to deal with an S1 shop again. An S1 organization handled administration of personnel issues for the Army or Marine Corps, although their real job seemed to be rejecting forms and delaying anything a soldier or Marine needed in order to get health care or do their jobs.
That sounds amazing, she grinned. But, honey, no.
But
I talked with Colonel Perkins.
Oh, great. Did she have any advice about...
The Legion is adding a star team. Perkins needs someone to set up training and coordinate between the Stars and the Mavericks.
Okay. I did not like how that sounded. Did she want you to recommend someone?
No.
She avoided looking straight at me.
I applied.
She could tell by the way I froze that I wasn't happy. The Legion will be based on Club Skippy, I told her what she already knew. That is thousands of light years from here. From me.
For now. If the Legion goes into action, Valkyrie will be there, won't you?
Oh, hell yes. No way. Holy shit. Maybe Perkins did want Margaret on her team. Maybe she really did recognize the dedication, experience, and skills that Gunnery Sergeant Adams could bring to the Mavericks. Or maybe Perkins was doing what she always did, what she did best, ruthlessly utilizing every asset available and manipulating people to achieve the objective. Perkins knew that with Margaret on the ground, serving with the Mavericks, I would have extra incentive to make sure Valkyrie was on the scene, protecting the Legion with my ship's big guns. Shit. I barely knew the woman, but Perkins sure as hell knew me. Hey, I asked as casually as I could. You applied? Like, she didn't contact you directly about it?
No.
She looked me in the eye, and I tried to look innocent.
I heard about it. All the Stars are talking about it. Why?
It's just... I turned away to get a bottle of water, really, so she wouldn't see the guilt on my face. I mean, you're an obvious candidate for the job. Telling Margaret that I suspected Perkins was using her would not end well. She looked at me sharply as her legs brushed against mine.
Because I haven't requalified for the stars yet?
Crap, why do I always say things the wrong way? Her recovery from brain damage was still a sensitive subject. Before we returned to Earth, she had not been ready to requalify. Since we came back, the Marines had kept her too busy to take the course.
Because of your experience. You know both sides, serving alongside special operators and being one.
Oh. Hey. I took her chin in my hand, gently pulling her to look at me. If you want to serve on a star team again, Smythe is staying with Valkyrie. We talked. He's not taking the UNSOC job.
I know, I heard. Also, I talked with Smythe.
You did? That surprised me. Crap. Everyone was talking behind my back and not talking to me. Okay, that was unfair. They weren't sneaking around me. They had their own lives and their own concerns. It just felt like I was the last person to know a whole lot of important stuff. Opening my mouth to ask when Margaret had talked to Smythe, I wisely closed my mouth without comment.
He told me he is jealous, she said with a smile.
Jealous?
Sure. He thinks star teams with the Legion will see a lot more action than units stationed aboard ships.
Ah, crap. The long periods of inactivity aboard the Dutchman or Valkyrie were a constant source of frustration and strain for the stars, who had to keep sharp while they had absolutely nothing to do.
Then why did he offer to keep you out of trouble?
Ah, part of me knew that was the answer. Can I say something?
Of course.
Be honest, please. I care about you. Is this the end of us?
No, lover. She kissed my forehead. I'm doing this for us.
Really? 'Cause it feels like if I'm with the Mavericks, you're not in my chain of command.
Oh.
Oh!
You will just be a foreign military officer.
A dashingly handsome foreign officer. I grinned and bit her earlobe.
Don't push it, she laughed, but she nibbled my neck.
I pulled away to look her in the eyes. You think this will work?
I think the brass will be satisfied it works well enough.
Taking a moment, I considered.
Yeah, probably.
The Pentagon had been willing to bend the rules a bit to accommodate special circumstances, but they could not continue to look the other way while two people flouted the rules. The Army is a team. If they made exceptions for cowboys, that would erode good order and discipline. Plus, it would be very bad for morale.
Hell, we won't see each other.
We won't?
What's the difference if I'm at Jaguar or on Earth while you fly Valkyrie around the galaxy?
It is different, I insisted. In the back of my mind, I knew my fantasy of having her aboard Valkyrie was a silly dream. It would be terrible for morale for the crew to know the captain was sleeping with one of the crew. On the flight to Earth after our kick-ass tour, we had been discreet, and that was only for a short time. Still, there were rumors, people looking at us and quickly looking away. It got awkward, and I felt terrible for Margaret. Sure, most of the crew probably were happy for her. They knew what she had been through. The crew also knew we were breaking the rules.
Can we try to make this work? She asked. I am not sitting on the sidelines while UNEF fights.
There might not be any fighting out there.
You believe that?
No, I admitted.
You are going to be out there?
I have to be.
I do too, Joe.
There wasn't anything good for me to say other than that I supported her. You will be careful. She arched an eyebrow at me.
Will you?
As much as I can. It sounded lame when I said it.
So, no.
She scowled at me.
You know what it's like out there. I do. That's why I need to be out there, too.
All right, I sighed. I don't have to like it, but I do have to respect that you're a Marine.
Damn straight, soldier.
She growled through clenched teeth, sounding tough. The effect was ruined when she leaned down and kissed me.